This episode is in support of our Awe Experience, a weekend of rest and care created for busy leaders. If you're used to giving everything at work, your community, or to your family, this is an invitation to pause. The Awe Experience offers a special place to rest, reflect, and connect community with other women across Oregon. Learn more about the powerful weekend at womenfoundationoforegon.org/get involved. Click on the screen to reserve your spot because rest is a part of leadership. Rest is my zeal, it's recharging my brain.
Welcome to the Women's Foundation of Oregon podcast. This is a space for pause, for listening, for stories that remind us we are not broken, systems are. Here, we center rest as a foundation for justice and explore what becomes possible when awareness leads to well-being and well-being leads to empowerment. I'm Libra Ford, your executive director of the Women's Foundation of Oregon. Thank you for being here. Take a breath, because justice doesn't move forward without rest. Well, good morning, or wherever. Skip that. So tell me this. When you think about rest, what does it mean in your life right in this moment?
That's a great question. I think that I have definitely learned to prioritize rest as I've gotten older. I think when we're younger, it's like, go, 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 and I'll rest when I'm dead.
Yeah.
But now I realize that rest is kind of the fuel that keeps me going, and I have to incorporate it, you know, on a regular basis. So on a daily basis, I'm trying to fit it in, whether that's meditation or going for like a short walk with my dog in nature, you know, like different forms of rest. It's not just sleep. Rest and sleep are very different. So I'm really trying to front load rest so that I have that energy and that balance to keep going and to do what I need to do. Because, I mean, if you put gas in your car at the end of the road trip,
you're not
going to get anywhere. Yeah.
I love that. And I love the front loading comment that you made about rest, because that's so important. Front loading anything in life is always going to get you to the end better. So now that we've gotten through that, tell me, who are you?
Well, my name is Dr. Zaria Rubin. I am a Harvard educated former neurologist, burned out in conventional medicine. We'll get to that. Turned international keynote speaker, TEDx speaker, and really a burnout expert and coach. And I focus on helping women leaders, you know, beat burnout, prevent burnout, heal their nervous systems, get out of survival mode.
Yeah.
So they can really thrive and change the world without sacrificing themselves in the process.
Yeah. And when we saw you and saw what you were and what you do, we were so excited because it lines up with our work so perfectly. But I also want the folks to know who you are outside of your brilliance in terms of your career. Like, who else are you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I am originally a Canadian. I relocated to beautiful Portland, Oregon. I have a wonderful husband. I have a phenomenal kiddo. And we have a couple fur babies.
Okay.
I got a gigantic kitten who's a rag doll who's amazing and a little puppy. And, you know, I'm also a singer. I sing with the Portland Symphonic Choir.
Let's go.
And yeah. I actually trained as an opera singer.
Let's go.
Back in the day. So I love singing and music as another way to kind of regulate the nervous system, heal and balance. And I'm also, you know, I'm kind of a bit of an activist, but a political activist, and try to really get involved in what's going on in the world and make a difference that way too.
Yeah. I mean, all of that makes sense, right? I think a lot of times when we bring up these other parts of our lives, people are like, that's so different. But
you know, the brain, you're working the same side of the brain with that math and science with your art, right? Same side. And then also an activist, absolutely. Rest and a regulated nervous system, those are the best activists out there.
Oh, rest is resistance,
that's
baby.
It. That's it. So let's dive into kind of your professional career. You were a neurologist, former, and you have a great education from, you know, some really, really pronounced educational institutions. And you left that entire world because of burnout. And so talk to me a little bit about, you know, the nervous system and burnout and what that means and why you even decided to leave the world that most people are, you know, wanting to be in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let me tell you, it is a really difficult thing to walk away from your dream, quote unquote, dream, because it turned out that it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. But I had worked so hard. You know, you've got that concept of sort of sunk costs and investment of time, investment of money, all that tuition, all those loans. And then, of course, the identity piece that I was a physician and I could not conceive of really being anything else. It was all I knew. It was all I had hoped for and worked towards since I was 5 years old. So to make the decision to walk away from that and have it not feel like a failure, because I mean, it definitely did in that moment. I think that there's just, you have to really kind of get to a breaking point, which is what I did. And I actually don't recommend getting to a breaking point. I recommend figuring it out earlier, but I ignored all of the signs, all of the warning signs. I used to say, like, my check engine light was on, you know, then it went off. And then, you know, kind of like it flashes on, then it goes off, then it flashes. And then it starts to be like on all the time. Yep. Yeah. And you've got that red light and it starts to get really annoying. And you think, like, what should I do about it? Well, I know. I'll like put some duct tape over it.
Ignore
it. It doesn't bother me so much. So ignore, push it down, just ignore. So I ignored all these massive sleep issues, insomnia. I was having nightmares. I was having panic attacks. I was barely able to get out of bed in the morning. I did not want to be at work. I was phoning it in. I mean, I was still showing up and doing my job as best as I could, which was performing at a very high level, because that's what perfectionists do. We keep performing, even if it's killing us. And I started to tell myself, well, I guess that's just what life is at this point. And my nervous system was just in a constant state of survival mode.
Wow.
Constant fight or flight. Probably some fun mixed in there. A lot of people pleasing. A lot of trying to do what I thought I was supposed to do. Make everybody else happy. And I thought that if I just served and served and served the patients and just gave and gave and gave and sacrificed everything I had, that I'd be happy. I'd be fulfilled, right? Because my gosh, how could I not be?
And that's the story that we're told.
Yeah. It's like if you just give and you sacrifice, you'll be happy. And you've got this, what are you complaining about? You've got this great job. You've got this great career. You have all this amazing education. I had all these incredible opportunities. Right. So what's wrong with me? Right. Start to wonder, like, and why is everyone else kind of doing okay? Why is everyone else not collapsing under this crushing weight and pressure of, like, you know, watching people die every day? And my nervous system was not cut out for it. I realized later it was just a mismatch in many, many different ways. And, you know, choosing medicine, choosing that career path, I kind of chose it for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
I chose it to get out of childhood trauma.
Got it.
And that's, I would say that trauma is really not the best foundation for choosing a career path.
Yeah.
So pro tip on that one. And, you know, so it actually really took an extremely significant wake up call for me to snap out of it and to walk away from medicine. And that was the sudden death of my best friend's husband. And that just shook me to my core. And I thought, wow, if this is it, this is all there is, this is all I get.
Yeah.
I can't continue to live my life in this way, in this fashion, on a layaway plan that maybe if I do all the right things, if I keep pushing, if I keep going, that maybe someday I'll be happy, even though I'm so miserable and so burnt out. And so that kind of gave me the strength to wake up and really pay attention to that check engine light. And then there's this quote that I came across that gave me the permission to walk away from medicine. And it was, no matter how far you've gone down the wrong road, turn back.
Hmm. Such a great quote. It's such a great story of not just like seeing yourself and giving yourself permission to be your full self, but a story of it's okay not to be what the world is saying you must be. In fact, you have so much more now, right? Based on that one really brave decision. I love to say to people, it's important that we're brave, not perfect. Because bravery is what moves us, right? Perfection just kind of keeps us really stagnant when we really analyze it. And so your bravery is just really pronounced in a way, for me personally, I love. And I think a lot of listeners can really kind of see themselves in your story. They may not be physicians, you know. There was a point I wanted to be. Then I realized I don't want to go to school that long.
No, it was too long. Let me tell you. Very long time.
And there's a lot of perfection in there, right? And it's definitely a tough career to be in. And we need the people that are good at it. But good on you to be brave. And speak to me a little bit about, you know, that moment of bravery. So you had this moment where you were close to death in a way that probably is really profound to you. But there's also this switch of going from that, this is really hard, to I'm still going to move. Like, speak about that and how your nervous system was there.
Well, I think I was sort of almost in a state of shutdown at that point. Like, I had been operating at such high sympathetic overdrive for so long, like in that fight or flight mode, that I started to shut down. And the way I explain sort of how the nervous system works and how, you know, we can conceive of it is really a survival mechanism that's designed to protect us and keep us safe. And so if you think sort of about the animal kingdom, when you're faced with threat, what are you going to do? You're either going to fight with a predator if you think that you can win, or if you're fast enough, you're going to run.
Right.
So that's the flight. And then if those options are not available to you, you're tiny, you're not fast, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to play dead.
Yeah.
So you're going to totally shut down and freeze and hope that that works. And I think that I was at that point and I was pretty much numb to everything. Mm. And then just randomly, I was living in New York City. It was in Central Park. There was an opportunity.
Best city in the world, by the way. I'm just saying.
I know, girl. So it was this random opportunity to try out tango dancing.
Oh, let's go.
And I had always been a dancer. I had danced, you know, and lived in Central America and stuff like that. And I thought, I'm going to give this a try. I don't know. Why not? Mm. And it was this amazing experience that through tango and through that connection with another person, and also really slow. I mean, tango, you got to be really slow. The movements are very intentional, very slow. You got to
no wasted energy.
You got to pay attention to what your partner's doing. Follow them. I was not a good follower in the beginning, let me tell you. But all of a sudden, it woke something up in me, like, oh, this is what it's like to feel something again. Like, this is what it's like to experience human emotion and my own humanity. And that had been just suppressed and dead for so long. And that to me also was a huge sign and a wake up call that I needed to do something different. I needed to get out of this because I was losing parts of myself that were very, very important. And I didn't even realize they were gone.
Well, there's a tip. Take tango.
Tango's incredible. Go take tango.
We got to find some tango places in Portland.
Ooh, I know some.
You do. Yeah. Okay, well, after this, definitely give me some. I'm interested. Now, I don't know if I'll find a partner tall enough, but that's okay.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
You just got to be ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can leave them.
Yeah, I'd be open to the other one leading, but, you know, he might be like 5'2", but that's okay.
That's okay.
That's okay. So here, as we talk about you taking tango and finding this kind of new calmness in your world and also a new identity, right? There's also this element of dreaming again, right? Because now you are in a new space. Like you said, your dream was to be a physician, and then you had to kind of create a new one, which is really what life's about. Like, one dream can happen and then you can dream more, right? So how did that happen? How did you start dreaming again? And what did your dreams start looking like?
Oh, well, you know, my lifelong dream really was to be a mom.
Okay.
And to have a family and to have a child. That was really number one. Mm. And yet I wasn't prioritizing that in any way, shape, or form, because I mean, medicine really almost prevents you from doing that. You were delaying. You were, you know, you're in school for so long. I mean, didn't finish all my schooling until I was 35.
Wow.
And then you start looking for a husband and it's like TikTok. So I really tried to focus on that. And I still ended up choosing careers and choosing jobs that were very high stakes and very high stress, because it was what I knew. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went from the frying pan into the fire.
Oh, wow.
And ended up working at a tech startup.
Oh, God.
I know.
Same difference.
And then ended up working in the corporate world.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In industry and climbing the corporate ladder, and ended up at the executive level and realized, oh, okay, I'm burning out here too. Mm. I'm burning out in all the ways and all the places. Mm. And I realized, well, if you keep burning out in different environments, maybe it's not the environment.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something internal that you have to look at. And so I really had to go deep and do some internal work and introspection and figure out why this kept happening and why I wasn't prioritizing my nervous system, why I wasn't slowing down. Because oftentimes, if you rest, if you slow down long enough for everything to stop and you're not constantly doing and constantly achieving, then you might actually have to reflect and face very difficult things from your life and from your past and from my childhood that I wasn't facing or confronting. And so I think that that mask of perfectionism and overachievement and do hustle culture, it often is masking that. And so it just was a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I wasn't ready to slow down. I didn't want to slow down. But eventually, you know, life gives you no choice.
That's
and
right.
Eventually I had no choice in that. I became actually very physically ill. And I mean, that's a wake up call in and of itself, that if you're not going to rest, your body's going to choose rest
shut down for you. Yeah.
And I unfortunately got to experience that firsthand.
And that's the key.
Terrifying.
We don't want people there.
No.
We want to catch you before you get to that point.
Do not get to that point.
That's absolutely. That is not the red flag you want. The red flag is the whispers, right?
Yeah, like you want to pay attention to those little tiny warning signals and really get attuned to those. And it's just like the car analogy. It's like, if you got a light that flashes on, maybe see what it is.
Yeah, get it checked out.
If you've got, you know, weird symptoms here and there, you know, you're getting more headaches, or you're not sleeping, or you've got, you know, pain here and there, you know, or you're just so tired that you can't function. I mean, these are really red flags that require attention, and they might require you to go see your physician, get some testing done, you know, get additional help and support.
Yeah. Yep. If you know, then you can actually work on it.
Right.
But if you don't know,
living in denial is not.
That's not the answer either.
It's not going to work over the long term. Yeah.
So I love what you're saying about rest and the fact that it's really the infrastructure of like collective impact, not just for you personally, but also for the work that you do in life. And that's kind of our theory of change at Women's Foundation of Oregon, is this concept that rest is the infrastructure. It is the foundation of all things that we want to see. Right. So tell me, in your expertise, how can a leader, especially a woman leader, kind of look at rest as a really strong way to not be depleted and also to be a better leader?
Mm, yeah. So I think that the way we've conceptualized rest in our current, you know, capitalist patriarchal society is that rest is something that you have to earn. Mm. Rest is instrumental, that it is like a means to an end.
Right.
That you only rest when you've earned it,
right.
And you only rest so you can become more productive, right? And then you only rest at the end, too. Right, you don't rest. I mean,
not in not in the beginning.
Right? No, there's things to do. There's to-do lists. Yes. There's items. There's projects. There's deadlines. There's mm-hmm. all these things. And I think there's a lot of guilt and shame mm-hmm. around it that women feel like, especially, well, I can't stop. I can't right. slow down. I can't rest.
Right.
And, you know, it's the concept of, well, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, so you got to fill your cup so you can pour it out. Well, maybe you could just fill your cup so you could have a full cup.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And then maybe you can rest, not because you've earned it, not because, you know, you need to do more, but because you're a human being
yes.
who deserves rest mm-hmm. and actually requires rest in order mm-hmm. to function. And so in order to be a strong leader, in order to have that vision, you know, we hear about that there's different types of rest, you know, the mm-hmm. seven types of rest. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on her name. She's a physician who coined this. She's an internal medicine physician.
Okay.
I have her name written down. I'm going to get it.
Okay. Yeah, let's see. What's her
you
name?
You guys can come this,
interested
right?
because I want to read about it, too.
Yeah. So I have notes here. Oh, my gosh. Okay, here it is. Okay, yes. So Dr. Dalton Smith, so she is an internal medicine physician. She came up with the seven types of rest framework. And it's really cool because we sort of think of rest as, well, okay, there's sleep.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of rest, right? It's much more complicated than that. So there's, you know, physical rest, which is, you know, your body and needing rest and needing sleep, which is, of course, paramount importance. Absolutely. But there's also mental rest, emotional rest, spiritual rest, creative rest, sensory rest, and social rest.
Wow.
So there's all these different types, and we may need them in different amounts at different times in different ways. And they inform, you know, how we rest and what we're refilling and replenishing and how these different types of rest can help us be better leaders and help us function better and perform better. If we are actually, you know, fueling ourselves in the way that we need and not just like, well, the phenomenon of like, well, I slept, but I still have writer's block,
right.
or I still have creative blocks. I can't ideate. I can't think.
Exhausted.
I'm exhausted,
right.
or I'm still in fight or flight mode,
right. right?
Because my nervous system doesn't know it's safe to rest. So maybe I got sleep, but I didn't get rest.
Right, right, right. I love those 7 points. We'll definitely have to dig deep into those because I think that's kind of the tools that people need, you know, because we do have these kind of general concepts around rest. And then when we don't achieve the level of rest that we're looking for, we don't understand it, where tools like this really help us.
Yeah, I think she actually has a little website with a quiz.
Oh, nice.
That will tell you your score is on all the different types of rest and, you know, what that score means and what you can do to address it. So it's pretty cool stuff.
That is pretty cool stuff. You also have some pretty cool stuff. You're a part of this co-author book, Thriving After Burnout.
Yes.
And I absolutely had the opportunity to read your story. And I'm just, I just want to say, and I think sometimes as older people, we don't say this to each other enough. I'm really proud of you. And I'm proud of your decision to live for you. Because now we have all of you, Dr. Rubin in full. And we get to sit here and hear you in a really calm place of offering information to others, but also using it yourself. So just super excited for your courage and your bravery to get to this point. And I hope that you encourage others to do the same. But you also have this awesome co-author book, which has many great stories in it,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, it's a compilation. It's not just my story. It's this wonderful physician, Sharon McLaughlin. She put together, you know, this collection, really, of stories. It's all women physicians, and it's all stories of how we were able to you know, thrive and recover from burnout in different ways, shapes, or forms. And so everyone tells their story, and we sort of gain power from the collective experience and knowing that you're not alone.
That's right.
That burnout is super common. I mean, it's at the point that it's epidemic where we're at right now, and that there's not this isolation and shame that I think is often we see with burnout of thinking it's an individual problem when it's really a collective, societal, systemic, as well as nervous systemic problem, you know? It goes both ways.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that it's a collective piece of work, because the other side of this burnout is collectively coming together, sharing, and then we collectively heal, right? And so I think that's the brilliance of things like this and the brilliance of people like you saying yes to coming here and speaking with us. It was an honor to, first of all, meet you, Dr. Rubin. You are now my family.
Oh, my gosh.
For life.
Well, yeah, the feeling is mutual. I was like, I don't know. We were like sisters in another lifetime.
Absolutely. 1,000%.
Yeah.
And I want to say to our audience, we have purchased a couple of books, Women's Foundation of Oregon. So we want to distribute that to others so we can continue the collective healing that you have begun in your bravery, and we'll make sure that that you guys know how you can get that. But thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for who you are, for what you are, and what you have contributed to our world, and what you will continue to do.
Oh, thank you so much. And, you know, I also do offer individual coaching for women.
Very nice. We'll have to put the link in there.
So it's a new program that I just launched, and I'm actually trying to make it really accessible, really digestible. It's a 90-minute deep dive one-on-one session.
Love it.
So that you don't, because I know when I was burned out, the last thing I wanted to do was like do like a 6-month intensive deep dive program with
you go away and
modules
like all day,
and
more
reading
stuff
and you're
to
like,
do.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of programs and a lot of things that address burnout, especially in the workplace, it's just adding more to
your work.
Oh, you're burned out. Well, here, why don't you go to this mandatory, you know, 12-week burnout training where you no, that's not what we need. We need to do less and, you know, take something off people's plates.
That's right.
And really just relieve some of that burden. So I'm trying to do that, and I'm trying to help more women leaders really shine and thrive. So, you know, because we have a lot of work to do.
We do.
We got to go change the world.
We do.
And we can't do that if we're burnt out.
We cannot. Well, thank you. And we look forward to seeing you again.
Same here.
Cool. As we close, we invite you to carry this conversation with you. Not as something to fix, but something to sit with. Rest is not separate from justice. It is how we sustain it. May you leave this episode with permission to pause, to listen inward, and to honor what your body and spirit are asking for next. Thank you for spending this time with us. Until next time, be gentle to yourself, stay grounded, and remember, rest is not a reward or luxury. It is justice.
Before we close, I want to give a moment just to invite you to join the journey. This show exists because of the shared commitment to thoughtful dialogue, rest, care, and the community. And when you join the journey, you're helping us sustain space where we can help showing others. Your support goes directly into creating episodes, amplifying voices, and building a podcast that reflects the values we talk about here. If this show has ever helped you slow down, think differently, or feel free, less alone, join the journey. Love this podcast? You can support it by joining the journey or partnering with us by sponsoring this show. Visit womenfoundationoforegon.org and learn more. Thank you for being a part of the community.
It was great today speaking about burnout and that sense of alarm that we feel when we are approaching burnout or we are in burnout. So I want to think about the fire alarm in your house. For some of us, in particular, for people that look like me, there was always that little chirp in the background. Many times you don't want to change that battery. So imagine the fire alarm that's always going off, and then eventually you no longer hear that chirp. It is just going off in the background. You stop responding to it. You live without panic. And then suddenly something really big happens in your house where you need that alarm to work, but you no longer hear it. That's your nervous system. being in an overreactive system all the time, and then it has to adjust in a real fire moment. We don't want that moment. We want to make sure that we're listening all the time. Now, not everything should feel like it's urgent, and not everything is urgent, and not everything is alarm. But everything loud sometimes needs to be listened to in a different way. It doesn't mean danger. Sometimes it just means we need to be curious. Everything urgent isn't always an emergency, but sometimes we need to pay attention. Part of rest is absolute discernment. Rest is knowing what is and what is not. You cannot regulate what you're not curious about. So don't ignore the chirp in the background. Question it. So here's my ask for you. This week, pause and ask yourself, is this a fire or is this an alarm that I need to be curious about? There is a distinct difference. Analyze that for yourself and figure out, are you approaching burnout or not? That little chirp in the back sometimes is your opportunity to ask good questions. I hope this helps you.